I see you. I see those swiveling hips. As from Chicago, the soul, jazz, funk, instrumental duo L.D. Young and Red Holt performing as the Young Holt Unlimited with Soulful Strut, the title track of their smash hit album of 1968. I like old songs. I like old music. It's great. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. You know how we do it. We talk about the things that we think are important, and no script, nobody's screening you to find out what it is you have to say. And certainly you must have opinions about the events of this week or on anything else you think is worthy of consideration and debate. This is where we get together in the marketplace of ideas, information, opinions, and ideas. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's hear what you're thinking. We had quite a week, wouldn't you say? And it's not done. It's still going on. This recount in Pennsylvania, the fallout of the recounts and so forth. So we have a lot to talk about. What's on your mind today? Let's hear what you have to say. 888-874-4888. One of the things I like about Free Your Mind Friday is, and about the program in general, is that people should be given the space to talk, to say what's on their minds. And it is unusual, if not rare, in radio land or in media land, whether even on air, on television, or even in print, that people actually have the room, some room, considerable room, to say what they have to say. And that is the one thing I think has been lacking all throughout media. Well, there's where social media stepped in, I guess, and picked up some of the slack, giving people ample room to say what they have to say. Sometimes it's not worth reading, but the concept of media is what I'm coming to, and this is one of the reasons that we really ought to cherish and support PRN. It is not usually the case that people can express themselves, share their thoughts, whether people agree or disagree. The idea is that there should be room for expression of an idea, of a thought, of an opinion. And this is why we have Free Your Mind Friday, incidentally named so by a listener, Sarah from Dallas, who said, okay, I think we ought to go with Free Your Mind Friday. And here we go. Another expression of how we listen to the listeners. So let's start up with our discussion for this week. What are you offering for our consideration today? Lincoln from Mount Vernon, what have you to say?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Great, great. All right, still miss you on WBR in the morning.
Lincoln, can I just say this? You're not sounding too good. Are you on a speakerphone or something?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
all right,
can
it
you
sounded
hear me
a little bit distant.
Oh, no. Yeah, on my end, you sound that way too, so maybe it's the phone.
Yeah. All right, so we're even. Go ahead.
Yeah. I find the recount donation is very suspicious. I'm like one of the callers, yes, I do concede that, yes, she is getting a lot of publicity from, or the Green Party is getting a lot of publicity from this recount move, more so than they have ever gotten, or more so than they got throughout the election. But however, I still think that it's really strange that this person who, or people who put up this $9 million didn't choose to put up that $9 million all this time when the Green Party was vying for the presidency and when she was vying for the presidency. So it suggests to me that whoever is contributing the money, it's not about the Green Party, but it's more about Hillary. Hello?
Yes, listening.
Yeah, that's basically just that observation I wanted to impart.
Well, what are you saying then? You're dancing around it. You're usually quite direct.
No, I am suggesting that it's saying that someone has some ulterior motives, and the ulterior motive is not really about the recount so much, but it's more so about Hillary. And I'm wondering who was this person who approached her, you know, to contribute this amount of money. I just find it suspicious.
But you don't know that it was Hillary. I mean, we're just conjecturing here.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's Hillary who put up the money. I'm saying whoever donated the money had some reasons other than the recount. Or their reason was to benefit Hillary, this person. Because if that person was so generous at this moment, why weren't they generous to the Green Party before, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, according to Jill Stein, the amount given so far, it's not 9.5. She had projected that the total cost would be about $9.5 million. Actually, it would appear that it is going to be higher if, you know, they proceeded with this case. And as you know, it has been scuttled, in effect. It's just in a shambles right now because of legal technicalities that they did not satisfy and the rulings of the courts. So that case is done. But there was a recent ruling earlier this week, where in Michigan, a bill has been passed, at least out of committee, that anybody wanting a recount who is 5% and more of distance between their votes and the votes of the victor or the winner in the case, they will now have to pay the entire cost of a recount, and that could go into the millions of dollars. The bill also says that they want to make this retroactive. So that means that what they're saying is they're going to go after whatever money the Green Party has by way of donations to fund this recall effort, having failed again to get their way. They just did not get what they were looking for. And, you know, you can have all kinds of opinions about it. My opinion is that they shouldn't have gone after a recount. It had no standing, and it made no sense. There was no direct benefit to the party. They made no case, and it just seemed to be a spontaneous decision. And that was consistent with the way the Green Party seems to be doing business, spontaneously. They should be really looking closely at what has been happening in terms of the political possibilities, in terms of running a national campaign. This is their fifth time out. They ought to be clear that they're not gaining ground. For whatever reasons, they're just not gaining ground. And it is more important, I thought, that they should examine this and retool accordingly, perhaps, avoid the presidential race and perhaps concentrate on local and statewide races where they stand a better chance of winning. But I thought that this whole recount move was extremely ill-advised, costly, and in the end, futile. So we'll see where they go from here. But it is clear that their actions are being interpreted as a declaration of war and on the system, which it is. And the system has declared war on the party. And we have to take a look at what this move by the Green Party, what it means for future political efforts. And we really ought to be honest about it. Thanks for getting us started today, Lincoln. Really appreciate it. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hello, how
David
are you?
Just playing a game, David, from Brooklyn.
And yes.
I want to kind of switch gears today, Eutrice. I want to talk about local community like Bedford-Stuyvesant and Crown Heights and whatnot. And what I want to talk about is that you don't always have to have a big group to get something done.
Correct.
For example, over here in Brooklyn, in Bedford-Stuyvesant, I know a person who would go around the neighborhood and see what blocks didn't have any trees. And I would take advantage of Mayor Bloomberg's program for a million trees and go and order the trees. And if you go on my block where I am, you have a whole block full of trees, maybe 30 trees. And when I got here, there were only three. So people can take things into their own hands, as Adam Clayton Powell used to say, and make a tremendous impact. If you live on a block in Bedford-Stuyvesant or Crown Heights and there are no trees there, you can dial your 311 and get some trees. And in many areas that I have been around, there are no trees and people have taken no particular action. The same goes with sidewalks. If you go to Manhattan and walk down Fifth Avenue, you don't see any broken sidewalks. All one would have to do is come around on some of the blocks over here, and you'll see all kinds of broken sidewalks. And all one has to do is call the 311 and tell them about a broken sidewalk or a broken pavement on the street, and the city will see by bringing out inspectors and looking at it and making those changes by doing it, the city doing itself, by sending contractors out to do it if you don't do it yourself. So what I'm saying is that people don't always have to wait around for a whole bunch of people or a community block association or whatnot. You can take things, as Adam Clayton Powell said, take it into your hands and take action and improve your community.
I agree. And that is a very worthwhile effort as well, because it adds to the beauty of the neighborhood. It creates a sense of beauty. And it's necessary, actually, because, for example, as you know, I live in Florida. There's a major consciousness about trees and greenery and green spaces. And one of the benchmarks of grading, if you will, communities is how many trees do you see? The sidewalks,
exactly.
Which are not only an offense to the eye, but it's also very unsafe. Many times in an uneven sidewalk, you could trip and have a serious fall. And especially with the elderly, they have to be extra careful in walking with sidewalks. Some sidewalks, you know, it looks like an outer space kind of experience here. You have pieces of concrete jutting out several inches from the level of the actual sidewalk. So it's a great idea to do, and it improves the community. I refer all the time to State Street in Brooklyn, which was, I mean, the neighborhood had just fallen into the hands of drug dealers and drug addicts and prostitutes, and it was a mess. And people were moving in because at that time, the housing was affordable there for working people and young people starting their families. And suddenly they started planting flowers. And
oh, yes.
it caught on. And that street is now considered the most beautiful block in Brooklyn. Lots and lots of flowers. The prostitutes are gone. The drug addicts and drug dealers are gone. And it has become a really wonderful neighborhood. So don't underestimate the power of trees.
That's right. That's right. And we have to combat a lot of ignorance. Some people say, oh, I don't like trees. One person told me they didn't like it because the leaves drop off, you know, the deciduous trees. and so there are a lot of people who have ignorant ideas about trees interfere with plumbing and houses and all kind of relatively ignorant things that they say. And people don't understand that trees make it a lot cooler in the summertime and help to insulate it in the winter. It's a wonderful thing. They clean the air, and it's a tremendous asset to the community when you have lots of trees, and it doesn't take the effort that used to be required to order trees. All you do is call up 311 and tell them where you want the trees, and the city will put the trees in. And people have to understand, they don't own the sidewalk. No one owns a sidewalk. The city owns the sidewalk, even though you're responsible for maintaining it. And you have no right to tell the city that they can't put a tree on the sidewalk in front or near your house. So I want to tell everybody that go out and order the trees for Bedford-Stuyvesant and Crown Heights and make the place look beautiful. And don't let anybody get by with having broken sidewalks or broken pavements on the street. Everybody take action. Look on your block. If you see a broken sidewalk, turn it in, 311. If you want trees, call it in, 311, and take some action. And it doesn't require a whole block association to do it. Take action, individual action. It's in your hands.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for calling in. From New Jersey, Joey, you on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are you?
Happy holidays. All right, thank you. I hope you're doing well. Happy holidays.
I'm hanging in.
Happy holidays to you and the PRN family.
Thank you for that.
I hope it's okay if I kind of like throw out a few things, not to really disagree, but I have a different perspective on some of the things that were being said. I'm retired now, and I looked at the election, and all I could do is shake my head in disbelief that we got fooled again. You know, good old George Bush, they keep fooling us, really. I see Donald Trump as just a regular guy myself. I'm not for or against him. I don't really think he's more or less racist as any other white guy that I've met in this country. In fact, I used to live in Virginia, lived in Leesburg, and had a pretty good friend who had the Union Jack, the Confederate flag on his wall. He was an okay guy. But what Donald Trump really signifies to me is really the privatization of the public sector. He's a businessman. And I think there's going to be all sorts of private-public partnerships in everything. No more public schools, no more public parks, and on and on and on. As far as other things are concerned, he's going to have people who will advise him. And I think that will be his weakness. He's going to take the advice from, you know, people in the State Department, those 51 employees that told Mr. Kerry that they wanted to have a more aggressive posture in Syria. Those type of people, that's what I'm scared about. So I really don't think that Trump is all that bad. And just to conclude, if I may, I think that as far as this recount goes, I think that's a good thing. I can understand what people talk about when they say that maybe the Green Party is trying to advocate for Hillary Clinton. And that may be possible, I mean, like, history says that everyone who graduated, not everyone, but many people who graduated from Harvard, Yale, and Princeton get employment in the CIA and the intelligence services. So on that perspective, perhaps. But excluding that, I think it's important that the Green Party advocate for a recount. I really think that people should look at how easy it is to take control electronically of any election all over the world with the use of Craig's supercomputers and the resources available to the intelligence sector, which is 80% privatized. There's no oversight, and they can do anything they want. So I think it's important to try to catch them off guard. But in Pennsylvania, they said that she had no standing. I think that, historically speaking, there would be a precedent, because I remember when Vice President Dick Cheney was alleged to have all this information go across his desk. And that's what cemented in history the concept of the man in the middle, man in the middle. So technologically speaking, it's very easy. If you look on the Department of Homeland Security, their website, they have a tremendous cyber awareness course. You know, they have a tremendous ability to teach these people computer science. If you went and worked at the Department of Homeland Security, you could graduate and get a PhD and all the computer certifications that you need. So I think that it's important in order to safeguard democracy to be able to look at who is in control of our elections. And ultimately speaking, I'm sorry, this is 2.75 of a comment.
You're very sneaky, but I'm okay with it.
Thank you. In the long run, ultimately, Citizens United is responsible for where we are today. If there was no Citizens United, we would not be faced with this dilemma. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, you know, the recount, the whole nine yards. So I believe I appreciate the opportunity to say all that.
Thank you. And I'm sure you'll get some reaction. Just on the issue of the recount, it's not that a recount, any recount, is unwarranted. It is, you got to know what you got to know what's your fight. This was ill-timed, ill-advised, and it was clear that they were not prepared. They didn't even make sense. Their argument didn't even make sense. You don't initiate a recount in order to find out if there is a problem. And then when they began to recount, the recount actually disproved everything that they had claimed so far. So, and then by then they had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars that they don't have. It was an ill-advised, in my view, it was an ill-advised effort. And it is going to now be used to usher in by the system, because they weren't prepared for this. They weren't prepared to take this action. Clearly, there was no charge.
You see, I say that the system will always, I'm sorry to interrupt, the system will always say that. But let me say that technologically speaking, you really can't look at that as far as coming up with evidence before fact.
If you're going to have a fight, you have to know what the ground rules are, if only to circumvent them, okay? You have to know what the ground rules are. You can't afford to play fast and loose. You have a major problem here, and the major problem isn't in my thinking. If you had to pick all the things that you should be dealing with at this moment, a recount isn't one of them. Because anybody who knows election law, who bothered to read the election law of the various states that they were wishing a recount in, you would see that you don't qualify to make a demand for a recount. That's a whole different struggle. You've got 1% of the vote. You have no standing. And you can't insist that you have standing because that's a whole other fight. What you ought to be doing is really buckling down to understand what happened with the party in its performance in this election cycle, what it needs to do, some really serious decisions it needs to take, because that needle has not moved beyond 1%. And that's the issue. Focus on that. And you could take on this recount fight at another time. But what you ended up doing was financing an effort that would benefit a Clinton. That's crazy. Take on a fight that you absolutely could win. And you can't afford at this time, when you should be talking about how you're going to deal with this administration, how you're going to use your resources, what is the picture within the party itself? Where are its strengths? Where are its weaknesses? What do you have to do? They have more than enough to handle internally to answer that question. Why didn't this party get more than 1% of the vote? That should consume them right now. But you can't venture into some new territory as a kind of diversion. You have no complaint. You have no evidence. You have no qualifications for being in the fight. And you have very few resources, but you choose to put them toward this futile effort. I say futile in terms of the likelihood of success. You're not going to succeed. Why start a fight that you can't win? Why not choose your time? Choose the moment when you think you'll be ready, when your ducks will be in a row, and where you have the best opportunity to win whatever it is that you hope to win. But this was just totally crazy. And it imperils further efforts by the party itself and by others, because now in reaction to this futile effort, the system is going to come down like a ton of bricks and seal up any possible remaining holes it has that would allow a successful attack. And it's going to move to penalize people, which it has already done, starting this week. So you have to think strategically. And there's very little evidence that this party was thinking at all about this move. And it has, in my view, threatened the security of the party and derailed the party from the work it needs to be involved in right now. It's just come off an election. It performed abysmally. Somebody's going to have to figure out why. And with that information, whatever they discover, how do you reform or retool this party if it is to exist at all? And if it is to be a meaningful part of the resistance, what are you fighting with? Everything indicates that you're in disarray. Everything indicates you're not prepared. That's what I'm saying. And it's one thing to have a fight, but it's a whole other ballgame when you are ready for a fight. Even if the opponents are far more armed than you are, once you're ready, it doesn't matter, because you know you're going to put up a really long fight. This thing, you could have seen this coming. This was just totally unnecessary, a total waste of resources and an embarrassment. Because on no level were you prepared to take on this fight. Playing fast and loose. And there's a cost to that. Thanks so much for calling. I really appreciate it. From Baltimore, Judy, you are on the air. What does Baltimore have to say for itself today? We're not hearing Judy. Okay, so maybe we lost Judy. Let's go to Rusty from New York.
Hi, Therese.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. So I'm Rusty Fields. I'm 18 years old, and I'm from Brooklyn, New York. We just moved back from Maryland, and I'm calling regards to the previous caller called in from Bed-Stuy, because I'm the president of our block association, and I'm just calling in. I heard him talking about how he got trees planted in his community and on his block. My brother and I, my brother's 15, he and I recently planted our block. We were saving up money to go to Dubai Open, and we used that $3,000 to plant up and down our block. But we're really, we'd like to figure out how he was able to, you know, get 311 to plant, to get the plants planted. Because we tried calling them, and they tell us that the landlord and the residents would have to agree before they could break the cement and put the trees in.
But didn't we hear David say that the city really owns the sidewalk?
Yes, but I was just calling in to see if he's still listening, if he can call back and explain how he was able to go about getting the trees planted. Because I called him, and that's what they had expressed to me.
Oh, wow.
They said I could put it in front of my house, but not in front of the others.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's great that you even had the interest or the idea of pursuing a beautification project of your block. That's fantastic. We need people like you. Secondly, I think it probably might be a good idea. Do you know what the disposition of the landlord is toward the project you envision?
Yes, I think they would be open to it.
Okay, so then it seems that you're well on your way to getting this thing done. If the landlord or the owners agree that they seem amenable to the project, and the city would put the trees in or whatever it is that you want done, then it's a matter of just formalizing that. I guess they have to sign some paper or something, and that begins the process.
Yeah. I was actually calling more so because some weren't in agreement, and so when he had said that the city does own, because we only have 5 trees on our block, and so, I think it'd be better if we had, you know, much more, and so when he says the city owns the sidewalk, I was trying to figure out how he was able to get the trees planted, because some of the residents aren't in agreement.
Okay, well, thank you, and good luck.
Thank you.
That you ought to be congratulated for taking such direct input in this project. That's fantastic.
Thanks
for that. Let's see. Chris from Lawrence, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Therese.
Hello. Good afternoon to you.
And hello to all the PRN listeners and staff.
Thank you so much for that.
This week, you've been talking a lot about the Green Party, and I know someone even asked, well, why don't you have Jill Stein on the show? And apparently she's refused to show up or to take calls. And let me ask, how about her vice presidential the vice president, was it Baraka?
Yes, Ajamu Baraka.
Yes, how about inviting him, seeing if he'll respond, or maybe anyone else from that party who was in opposition, because it seems like someone there has some sense of strategy, some sense of, you know, of what's a priority for their party. And from what it looks like, she obviously doesn't. In addition to the fact that, aside from it looking like they're they might be assisting them, even if it doesn't look like that, that's what it would do. And so that's what it is.
Now, let me just say for the record, When I contacted the campaign, this was during actually the campaign. At different points throughout the campaign, I asked, you know, I submitted requests for interviews and so forth. No response whatsoever. And I talked about it on the program. But this is not the first time. When Stein was running in the last presidential race, exactly the same result. No returned calls, no agreement to just come on the program. So, you know, I don't know what it means. And frankly, I don't care to know what it means. It was just, to me, if I'm running on a tight budget and somebody says, hey, come on, and, you know, we have a whole hour available to you. It's not me interviewing you. It's you being available to take questions from the community, and we don't get an answer. I mean, I think the record shows that I made a strong effort to just get the campaign some help in the sense of making the representative of the campaign, the runner, the person running, sorry, who would be available to the public. And they didn't take me up on that. So that told me, since in the last election, that told me that they're not that tight. The organization wasn't all that tight in there. Who was coordinating their media outreach and so forth should have jumped on that. But, you know, it's their loss.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that.
That that party should even still, I don't think at this point that that party should even exist anymore. And that money could have been used for basic infrastructure, outreach, and research. I mean, you'd be lucky to even see a Green Party poster or a, what do they call them, the little things, they flags they stick in the front lawns. You don't, I've never seen one anywhere. And, you know, it was an extreme waste of money and time, and even the own party seems to believe so. And I would definitely lean towards that party disappearing completely as advice to anybody who's into it. I mean, my son voted on that side. And again, I think it was a waste of time. And if I was at any job for, how long has that party existed now? I've only known about it for about 2 years. But let's say it's been around for 10, 15, even 20 years. If you can't accomplish a goal at your job for 10 to 15 years, I don't know how you still have that job. You know, well, a surgeon at some point's got to cut a body open.
I think they are legitimate questions because, A, we desperately need a very efficient third party that is getting the job done. We need it. And I've said it publicly. The pity of it is that there's such an urgency for a well-functioning party right now, and there doesn't seem to be one. That doesn't mean that there couldn't be one. It's just that they're not taking care of business. And
yeah, I mean, there definitely should be one, but I'm going to say it should not be that one. With that kind of track record, you have to start from scratch.
But there are many advantages to working. If the party is in any way serious about getting its act together and really hunkering down in a very pointed way to say we are going to do A, B, C, D. These are the four major objectives that we have for this year. People could understand that. But you're putting out all these things that you're going to do, and you know you can't. You don't have the resources to do them. And you're making yourself look, you're looking very shoddy when you take on a fight like this, big recount effort.
In order to reform that party, which is what I hate to use the word reform. I think it's such a energy-wasting word. But you would have to have the same power that certain shareholders have when they come into companies. You'd have to be able to come in and fire everyone who's responsible for these bad decisions.
I agree with that.
If without doing that, and that's what they do with companies. You come in, if the company was failing, who are the managers, middle management up? Those are the people that are responsible for the failure, so they go first. They have to go first. All of them, not some of them. Everybody's fired. If they don't have that sort of structure and responsibility and authority within their own party, then it's doomed from the beginning. It's not worth even walking in the room if that structure doesn't exist there. For the people, I'm not talking for me, but for the people who are in it now, if you don't have that in your bylaws or your policies, then you're in a trap. You're in a trick. You're in a trick because you really truly think you have a powerful party, but you have no power within that party. It's a trick. Any company will tell you, when we come in, everybody's fired. Because if it was failing and you needed my help, it's because of those people right there. So they got to go if you want my help.
Hmm.
And that's how you would negotiate that. Anything else is a joke.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend.
With this idea that the party has to, it's long overdue for this party to do some really brutal self-assessment and take some very, very serious action and clean up its act, because it's just out there wasting time. You know, you can say, well, it's 5 years, five times we've run, and we still, you know, wet behind the ears in terms of presidential campaigns. I'm saying, but it's 20 years. Two generations have gone by, you know, since you're trying to figure out how to be a party. Let's see if we can get that straightened out, at least this year. Thank you so much, Chris, for your call. Well, it looks like Baltimore is back with us. Judy, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me this time?
Okay. Welcome. What have you to say today?
Today, I am very moved and happy about at least the current battle win at the Dakota Access Pipeline. I was really moved by the forgiveness ceremony where you see Leonard Crowdog and Wesley Clark and Wesley Clark Jr. asking for forgiveness for the veterans, for all the sins that the Army did against the Sioux people. And the whole ceremony really moved me. And the fact that once the veterans showed up to stand with the Indians, that's when President Obama suddenly changed his mind and, you know, could say, okay, we're going to shut the pipeline down for now. Of course, Trump's going to come in and want to turn it around. I mean, he has personal investment in it. But, you know, I think that people are going to have to stop looking to the institutions of government, like parties, in a way, organized parties, because at the moment they're all co-opted, and really start looking at other people and taking a stand with people for people. And that's what, to me, what happened when the veterans went up to stand with the Native Americans. It was an amazing victory. And I also think what's going to happen as we walk into the next, 4 years or more with Donald Trump. I don't see how people stand against corporations other than by non-participating, because it takes policemen who are regular people and military who are regular people to recognize that they're people first and not part of the arm of the state, because the state is ineffectual if they don't have some way to make people follow the laws. Those guys can sit up and talk about all they want to do, but without a military or a police force to enact it, it can't happen. So I just wanted to point that out. I don't know if people are really looking at what happened up there.
But. Yes, and thank you for giving us that update. The thing is this, and it should not be lost. All of this basically was riding on the consciousness of one important thing, and that is, these weren't just tribes or tribes being supported by the veterans and so forth. All this is great. But you know what is really important to understand here is that this was about sovereign nations forcing the United States into a situation where it had to defend itself against violating yet another treaty. These weren't just people who used to, you know, they live out there. These are sovereign nations. We've done programs here talking about this very thing, about sovereignty and law. They were enforcing, or they were coming from a point of view that this is their sovereign land. And how many times has the United States government, aiding and abetting corporations for blind profit, how many times have they just totally abrogated their responsibility and duty based on sovereign law? This is a really, I'm preparing a program on that now. This is a matter of sovereign law. And it's not just about the pipeline.
Agreed.
It's not about, you know, the environmental impact of this. This is about sovereign law. These people are First Nations people. And the issue here was about them exercising their sovereign rights. That's the issue. And that is a major issue that has been going on, as you know, for hundreds of years. This is their country. This is their land. And even the silly concessions that the United States made back in the day, and even now, the question is, has the United States government honored in any way the treaties that were made? Do they recognize these nations as sovereign nations indeed? And what therefore is the obligation of the government, the U.S. government here? Here we should have seen in this issue the dispatching of a cabinet-level member, just like they would if they had a treaty with Guam or with Manila or some other country. That's what was needed. You dispatch your minister of the interior, you dispatch an ambassador. That's the caliber of people. That's where that negotiation belonged. It belonged at that level. The Obama administration was entirely offensive here and cowardly, because it should have treated, it should have honored its, I mean, respected its own treaties and behaved in an honorable way by understanding the level at which this communication should have been going on. Isn't that for some company to decide what happens with a nation and what they can do and not do with the nation? This is for a national representative of the United States to dispatch a diplomatic person or a diplomatic corps to the representatives of the sovereign nations involved. We're going to get to that.
That would be a first.
But you see, that was lost in the soup, isn't it?
Totally
lost. People are thinking, well, it's about a pipeline. No, it's not. At the root of it is complete disrespect for the fact that we have two sovereign nations involved in what would be a dispute. And it ought to have been treated in a very different way, in accordance with the recognition that you have two sovereign nations involved. It should be no different than, you know, some country having a problem with a bordering country. That's when you get diplomatically involved. But that's not the way they disgraced themselves, the United States. And the Obama administration disgraced itself, because especially since it knows what's coming, it should have moved in a way to protect its sovereignty, along with the sovereignty of the First Nations that were involved. Thanks so much. I'm so glad we waited for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate your input today, too. Thank you so much. Well, we have room for one more to go. So, Steve from Brooklyn, you're the guy.
Hi, you trees.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Thank you.
Perhaps I'm missing something. It's simple, but isn't the function of the recount for the Green Party to do a kind of back-channel damage control for Hillary?
We don't know what the intent was.
Well,
except that it was said, this is what was said by Jill Stein, that the purpose of the recount was to assure the integrity of the vote, that every vote should count and that every vote should be counted. Had nothing to do with anything else. That's according to the Green Party itself, that was the purpose of the recount, which tells you right off the bat that this they were wrong. They were on the wrong track from the beginning.
But if the recount had produced a Democratic victory, that would have been a real result, right?
Well, in a way, it produced a result other than the anticipated result, because in every state where they had begun at least the recount, Trump won, even by more votes than they anticipated.
But that doesn't mean that the chance shouldn't have been taken to see if there might not have been a Democratic victory, right?
No, the point is, it's not your job. If the Democrats wanted to know how they did in these three states, let them finance their recount effort.
Well, Hillary had already pledged to accept.
Let them ask for a recount.
Hadn't Hillary already pledged?
It's not an easy thing asking for a recount. You got to understand what you're doing when you're asking for a recount, especially as a non-mainstream party. You are basically indicting the electoral system, and people don't like that. And they will get back at you, as they are now with the Green Party. Because the inference was, we are choosing these states, by the way, it's the states in which Trump won, but by a slim margin. So the thinking was that if they did it, it's possible that they could make a dent in his final vote, which of course did not happen. And that's a clear indication you haven't done your homework. But in any event, if it were to prove anything in the benefit of either party, the Democrats or the Republicans or whatever it is, you have no standing. And it's not like you asking for a recount because the Green Party did so well and the margin of victory between the Green Party and other parties was just so slim that you want affirmation that the votes were properly counted. You got less than 1% in each of the states. You have no standing by law. You have no standing to ask for a recount. And certainly if you got one, you have to pay the cost. And it would be a benefit to the Democrats, it would be of benefit to the Republicans, because your financed recount, the Green Party's financed recount efforts, proved that Trump was doing even better. So he got a great benefit there. And it proved that Hillary Clinton actually lost. There was a benefit there, but not to the party. Not to the Green Party. Got nothing out of this.
But there was no way to know that in advance.
My point exactly. First of all, it's not your fight. This is not your fight.
Unless you call against Trump a fight.
I'm sorry?
Unless you call being against Trump a fight. It was a recount called against Trump, which didn't work, but it might have.
Is that it? The point? What is your fight? Is finding out how come you could not move beyond 1% in this national election. That's your fight. All the other parties are well situated well-financed. They've got all the personnel they need. They have a battery of lawyers to do whatever it is they want to do to affirm their victory and to absolutely prove that, you know, everything was on the up and up. And they got all the resources. And it's their fight. It's not your fight.
Let but they'd already backed out of the fight. Hillary already pledged not to ask for a recount. So this is a way of doing it without doing it.
Exactly. And they don't have to put out a dime. And the Green Party that could least afford to do this kind of thing, I'm talking now millions of dollars in an effort that is so futile, just on the face of it. It makes no sense.
But
and
didn't
it
Stein,
benefit
sorry, go ahead.
The other parties.
Didn't
well, we've
Stein
come to
say
the end
that those
of the program,
dollars,
though.
Those millions, I'm sorry.
No, no, finish your sentence.
Didn't Stein say that those millions of dollars were contributed specifically for the recount and that they were in a fund that the Green Party couldn't otherwise touch?
Well, we will soon know if a thorough investigation is done. We will know all of that. But I'm saying on the face of it, as they say in Brooklyn, it don't look good. Thank you for calling today. And that brings us to the end of the program. Quite a few more calls than we were able to take today, but we'll figure a way to get them done and accommodated in the coming week. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And it's the weekend, so surround yourselves with positive people and positive things. It's a pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Thank you.